Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Brachas Daf Yud Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Following the conclusion of our regular Daf Yomi Gemara Shiur, we will offer a supplemental Shiur covering the Tosfos of our Daf, for those who are interested. Today's Shiur begins 8 lines from the top of Daf Yud Daled. Toward the end of our last Shiur, we mentioned that there was a Machlokes Tanoim concerning interruptions between the paragraphs of Kriyat Shema and in the middle of the paragraphs of Kriyat Shema. To be more accurate, in fact, between the paragraphs of Kriyat Shema, there was a certain level of agreement that you could initiate for honor purposes, but as far as what you could respond for, there was a machlokis. And likewise with regard to between the paragraphs of Kriya, within each paragraph, there was also a standard given for what one can interrupt. And as a result of that issue, the Gemara now asks a question regarding interrupting in Hallel and Megillah, the Megillah that we read on Purim. Bar minei achi tano debei Rabbi Chiya. Achi was the name of the individual, and he was apparently an expert in Tanaic sources that had learned in the yeshiva of Rabbi Chiya. So Achi asks, "May Rabbi Chiya?" He asks of Rabbi Chiya, "Bahalil of a Megillah, mahu shiyafsik?" What about a break or an interruption in the middle of the Hallel and in the middle of the Megillah? Mi Amrino. Now there are two sides to the question, and that's why you may note here an Aleph, and then there's a squiggle underlined Oidoma on the next line, indicating a transition to a second side, and then a Beis. So the first side is Mi Amrino Kal V'Chomer. Do we use Kal V'Chomer logic? Kriya Shema Deraisa Posek, there is an allowance for interruptions, Posek interruptions, in Kriya Shema, which is a Torah-based Halacha. Halel Derabonan Mibaya. As far as an interruption in the Hallel, what I need to tell you that you would certainly be allowed to interrupt for the same reasons that were given for Kriya Shema, Oy Dilma, or do we say Pirsume Nisa Adif, that promulgation of the miracle. In other words, when we recite the Hallel, we're commemorating in a often in a public fashion. We are commemorating the event of some miraculous nature, and that has such significance that when you're involved with Pirsume Nisa, publicizing, Pirsume has to do with publicizing the Nase, the miracle, that is Odif, has a greater standard that we would apply to it, and you cannot interrupt. Omar Le, so Rabbi Chiya answers, Posek ve'en bekach klum. You can interrupt, as we had the Kriya Shema standard before, and that applies the same to Hallel and Megillah. Omar Rabba, yomim shehayochid goymer bohen es ha-Hallel. We should note that with regard to the Hallel recitation, there are days on the calendar that a full Hallel is read, and there are days that are called Ein Hayochid Gomer Benes Hallel. Those are days that only partial Hallel is said. Two paragraphs, Loi Lonu and Ohavti Kishma, are omitted from the Hallel. So, regarding the days that the entire Hallel is read, Yomim Shayochid Gomer Benes Hallel, Bein Perek Leperek Poisek, Beemtza HaPerek Eino Poisek. Those days between paragraphs one can interrupt, but within in the middle of a paragraph, one cannot interrupt. V'yomim she'ein hayochid gomer bohen es halel. Those are days that, as we mentioned before, two paragraphs are skipped. So afilu be'emtza haperek posek, even in the middle of a perek, even in the middle of a paragraph, one may interrupt. And it's safe to say this issue of interruption would be along the lines of what's called she'ela shalom, for greeting someone. The Gemara asks, "Eini, is this so? V'ha Rav Bar Shva ikla legabe de Ravina. Rav Bar Shva visited Ravina. The yomim she'ein hayochid goymer buenas halel. They were days that the halel was of lesser significance insofar as those paragraphs that we mentioned before were skipped. Have, it was one of those days of ein hayochid goymer buenas halel. V'lo posik, and Ravina." V'lo posik lei, and Ravina did not interrupt for a greeting Rav Bar Shva. And you said just before that when it's Yomim She'ein Hayochid Gomer Bohen Es Halel, even in the middle of a paragraph, one is entitled, one may interrupt. So the Gemara answers, Shaini Rav Bar Shva, the case of Rav Bar Shva is different. The lo choshiv olei de Ravina. Ravina was a significantly greater individual, apparently, and therefore he was not considered significant enough or important enough to Ravina to warrant Ravina's interrupting the middle of the Hallel for greeting Rav Bar Shva. So that one can't really raise a question from the case involving Rav Bar Shva. So that the if one is going to try to bring a raya or a question from the fact that Ravina did not initiate an interruption to greet Rav Bar Shva, you can't bring proof from here. Or more accurately, you can't raise a question from here. Boi mine Ashion Tano Debe Rabbi Ami. Ashion is his name, and like we saw before, he was probably an expert in Tanaic sources in the yeshiva of Rav Ami. So Ashion asks, May Rav Ami, asks of Rav Ami, Hashori Betainis Mahu Shiyitom, someone who is in the midst of a fast, he is fasting, can he taste something? Achila Ushtio Kobulole Vaholeka. The one who accepted upon himself a fast, he accepted upon himself not to eat and drink. But by tasting, one is not accomplishing eating or drinking. Rashi adds here the issue of tasting. One tastes a dish in order to know whether it needs more spices or more salt. So tasting something for that purpose is not considered eating nor drinking. You're tasting for a purpose that's for the purpose of evaluating the spice level. Oy Dilma Hano Kobul Ole Vaha Ika. Or is the one who has accepted a fast accepted upon himself not to derive any food related benefit. And well, he is experiencing a sense of hano, a sense of pleasure in his tasting. Omale, so Rav Ami answers, Tayim v'ein bekach klum. One is entitled to taste and does not have to worry about his violating his fast. The Rabbeinu Hananiel that's found in the Tosfos says that this tasting involves putting it in your mouth and then immediately spitting it out. That's considered, that's what this to'im v'ein bekach klum means. And we can look at the Tosfos toward the bottom of the page, to'im v'ein bekach klum, pirush rach, shechoizer upolet. He then spits it out, de lo choshiv hano min hati'imo. It's not considered a sense of pleasure from the tasting. Avo bolea loy, but to swallow it, that would not be acceptable. Afilu b'shar tanios, even regarding other fast days. In other words, the Gemara is featuring someone who accepted upon himself a personal fast. But even on other fast days, which are legislated fast days, this will not be allowed. In other words, to swallow. And therefore, one who spits out, he puts in his mouth to taste and then spits out, doesn't require a brocha beforehand, she'eino nana, because he's not considered benefiting. There is quite a bit more to discuss on this particular topic, but for our purposes, we will continue in the Gemara. The Gemara, after hearing Rav Ami's response that tasting is okay on a fast day, and as if you want to accept the pshat of the Rabbeinu Chananel, it's tasting and spitting out. Tanyo Nami Hochi, the Gemara here on the fourth wide line now brings a Tanaic source that supports this ruling. Mat Emes, that has to do with tasting. Eino Tuna Brocha, doesn't necessitate a Brocha. V'hashori B'tainis, Toim V'ein B'kachlum. And that's the point that's the support for our for Rav Ami's ruling. The second point here, that someone who's in the midst of a fast can taste and there is no violation of the fast. The Gemara now asks, Ad kamo, up till how much? Rav Ami Ravasi, Tami ad shiur revi'osa. They would taste up till, and it seems this is a liquid quantity, up till the shiur of a revius of a lug, a quarter of a lug, which is a liquid measure. So they would, if it came to tasting something, it would taste up till that amount. The Gemara continues. And before we get into the Gemara, let's glance at our topic heading in the outside margin. Ein l'leches la'asokim lifnei hatfila. The Gemara here will mention the prohibition of engaging in personal activities, personal activities in the sense of business matters and the like, prior to one's morning davening, one's morning prayers. Omar Rav, kohanoisin shom chaveru kodem shispalel. Anyone who greets his friend before he davens, ki'ilu asoi boma. It's as if he made his made an altar. A boma is an altar that's prohibited. After the Beis Hamikdash was built, all sacrifices were to be offered on the central Mizbeach in the Beis Hamikdash, and personal altars would be prohibited. Now, what's the association between greeting one's friend and making a boma? So it's borne out in the following pasuk, Shenemar, Chidlu lochem min ha'adam, asher neshama ve'apo, ki vameh nechshav lo. So, al tikri bameh, elo boma. Don't read it as bameh, which is the actual vowelization when you would read the pasuk ordinarily, but rather read it as boma, and from that you get this drasha. So that the pasuk is saying, chidlu is to desist. Chidlu lochem min ha'adam, desist from a person who breathes, a living person, not to do so, rather to greet him, to give him prominence, is then as if you made him into an altar. And as you're giving him significance over the Almighty, to whom you should relate to first in the morning. Shmuel Omar, Shmuel doesn't see the change in the word in the reading. He doesn't go from bameh to boma, but rather, Shmuel Omar bameh chashvosoi loze veloy leeloka. The bameh means through that, the idea of greeting one's friend in the morning prior to davening. So through that, you are granting him importance, preeminence. in the face of the Almighty, so that he reads it as it is. Bameth means through that which you gave him prominence, that is your friend. Mosiv Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes raises an objection to this halacha of not greeting one's friend from our Mishnah. It says in our Mishnah, Vaprochim Shoyel Mitnei Hakavod Umeshiv, that between paragraphs you can initiate a greeting to to someone that you owe honor to, and you can also respond. So Kriyashma, it ought to be noted, is before Tfilah, and here it says Shoel, you can initiate a greeting. So how will this jive, or how will the law of Rav and Shmuel jive with this? So the Gemara answers, Tirgama Abba, Rabbi Abba, that means Rabbi Abba explained the law of Rav and Shmuel about not greeting one's friend, b'mashkim lepischo, referring to someone who goes out of his way to greet one's friend or to say hello to his friend before his own davening. That's mashkim, literally getting up early, lepischo, to his doorway. However, meeting someone on the way to shul, or you're in shul, like the case of Kriyat Shema, you didn't go out of your way, but someone who deserves kavod walked by, so that's not going out of your way to greet him, then it's okay to greet him. It's say hello to him. Omar Rav Idi Bar Oven, Omar Rav Yitzchok Bar Ashian. We have a double underline here to highlight the memros of Rav Idi. So Rav Idi says, "Asur lo le'odam lasus chafotzav kodim shispal." A person cannot tend to his own needs before he davens. Shenema tzedek lefonav yalech ve'yosem l'derech pe'omav. The Rashi explains, tzedek is tefillah. Tzedek is literally as to do with righteousness, but it's a reference to the davening, shematzdikoi leboroi, that through davening a person is considered righteous or justified in the face of the Almighty. And then v'hodar v'yosen pomov ledarkei chafotzav, pomov literally are his feet, but he then after he tzedek, after he justifies himself and shows a sign of piety in front of the Almighty, then he shall go on his way to for his own needs. Another statement of Rav Idi, V'yomar Rav Idi bar Oven, Omar Rav Yitzchok bar Ashian, Kol ha-mispalel v'achal yitz l'derech. He who follows this pattern or prescription of first davening and then going on his way for his own needs, HaKadosh Baruch Hu oisel l'chafotzov, the Almighty will see to it, will take care of his needs. Shenemar, tzedek lefonav yalech, vayosem l'derech pa'omav. That if one davens first, then the Kodesh Baruch Hu will take care of his needs. Omer Rav Yoina, Omer Rav Yizera, kol halon shivas yomim b'loy chaloim. He who sleeps for 7 days and doesn't experience a dream, nikra ra, is considered wicked. Shenemar v'sheva yolin. Let's read that again. V'soveya yolin bal yifkad ra. Al tikri soveya ela sheva. Don't read it as v'soveya, which has to do with one who is satiated, but rather read it as sheva, as seven, because with the same letters, just with a change in the vowelization, and the scriptures don't include vowelization in a written sense, so that you have there is this possibility of understanding this word as v'sheva. Then you would end up reading the pasuk as v'sheva yolin, one who sleeps for 7 days bal yifkad, without being without experience a dream, is ra. Omar lei Rav Acha brei Rav Chia bar Abba. Rav Acha says to Rav Yoina, Hachi Amar Rav Chia Amar Rav Yochanan. Thusly, Rav Chia says, and this is a second approach to the pasuk, Kol hamaspia atzmo midivrei Torah v'lon ein mevasenos obsuros ros. Similar to what we saw before, he doesn't change the reading of the pasuk. He leaves it as visavea. And he says the word soveya has to do with one who is satiated. So one who satiates himself through Torah learning and then goes to sleep, he doesn't aim at vasrano, so he's not informed of evil tidings. Shenemar v'soveya yolin bal yifkad ra. One who goes to sleep, soveya, satisfied with Torah learning, and is full of Torah learning, he will not be he won't be informed of bad news. Eluhein bein haprokim v'chulei. Amar Rav Avo, Amar Rav Yochanan halacha k'Rav Yehuda. Di Amar bein elikechem le'emes v'yatsiv lo yafsik. So Rav Avo rules, quoting Rav Yochanan, he rules like Rabbi Yehuda, who says that between the third paragraph of Kriyat Shema, the end of the third paragraph of Kriyat Shema, which ends with the words Hashem Elokechem, Ani Hashem Elokechem, and then the next paragraph begins Emes V'yatsiv V'nochon V'chu, etc. So that between Elokechem to Emes V'yatsiv, which is the as we said, the end of the third paragraph of Kriyat Shema, and the brocha that follows, there should be no interruption. In other words, there was more flexibility between the previous paragraphs, where there were where there was a heter for interruption, for greeting, but not in this case. Amar Rav Avo, Amar Rav Yochanan, my time at Rav Yehuda. First, Rav Avo quoted or ruled like Rav Yehuda, and here he's now asking, why is Rav Yehuda so strict with regard to this point? Answer: Dichtiv, and we continue now on the top of Daf Yud Dalam with Beis. The pasuk says, "Vashem Elokim Emes." There is, in other words, there's another pasuk. There's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu which has the name of the Almighty together with the word Emes. It is true the end of Kriyat Shema doesn't have the word Emes in it. It just says Ani Hashem Elokechem. But since there is precedent for having the name of the Almighty together with the word Emes, so there is no interruption allowed. The Gemara asks, Chozer v'oimer Emes, o eino Chozer v'oimer Emes. After a person, let us say, he paused between, he had said, Hashem Elokechem Emes, he finished his recitation of the Kriyat Shema, and then, let us say, he waited, he paused, maybe he waited for the Shliach Tzibur to catch up, or to say the end of the last few words there as is customary, and this person who had waited wants to continue after this gap. When he continues, does he say the word Emes again? In other words, he had already said Hashem Elokechem Emes, and then paused, and then he wants to continue. Does he continue saying the word Emes again? Emes v'yatsiv v'nochon, and the logic behind that would be because Emes is really the first word of the of this new paragraph. The fact that we have a practice of attaching the word Emes, which is not part of the Kriyat Shema, with the last pasuk in the parsha of Tzitzis is because of this pasuk. But as far as the true text of the of that first bracha that follows the Kriyat Shema, the first word truly is Emes. So does he say Emes again or not? The Gemara continues, Omar Rabbi Avo, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Chozer v'Omer Emes. Yes, he has to say it again. Rabbo, Omar, Eino Chozer v'Omer Emes. He does not say it again. Hahu dinochis kamei de rabba. There was an incident where someone served as a shliach tzibur in front of rabba. Shame rabba di omar ms trei zimni. He heard him say the word ms twice. In other words, he had said Hashem Elokechem ms, and then when he continued the next paragraph, when he continued with the bracha, the following kriyashma, he said ms again. Omar rabba, reacted sarcastically, said kol ms ms tafsei lahai. He said, boy, this person has become possessed. Tafsei is held by or possessed by ms. In other words, there was no need for him to say ms again, as per rabba's own ruling. Omar of Yosef kamu ma'alyo ha shmaitza dechi osir of Shmuel bar Yehuda Omar. How Amalia is how wonderful or how positive the following teaching is. The teaching that we heard when Rav Shmuel came, he said, Amri b'marava, he reported that they say in Eretz Israel concerning the evening Kriya Shema, Arvis, the practice they had in the evening Kriya Shema was as follows. They would say in the, we'll say that after finishing the first two paragraphs of the Kriya Shema, the Shema and the V'hoyim Shemoa, when it came to the paragraph after that, the third paragraph, they said something very abbreviated. They said, they would read, Daber el b'nei Yisrael v'yamata lehem, Ani Hashem Elokechem Emes. Leaving out all of the content of that third paragraph that dealt with the tzitzis. Why did they leave out the section dealing with the tzitzis? That's because tzitzis is something that is not binding at night. You need, the pasuk says, "Re'isem oiso," you shall be able to see it. If you can't see it, namely at night, under natural circumstances, of course, without artificial lighting. So the night time is not a time for tzitzis. So they would start the paragraph, and they would read just the first couple words of the paragraph, including Daber al Bnei Yisrael, V'yomarto Aleihem, and then skip to Ani Hashem Elokechem Emes. Abaye now raises a question. The question lasts a few lines of Gemara text. You can see we have a long question marking the kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dash line indicates the length of this question. And the topic of our Gemara here, we have on the outside margin the nosei regarding the Parsha Sitzis Ba'arvis Im Hischil Gomer. If he begins it, he must finish it. The question that we will deal with, what does it mean to begin? What constitutes a beginning? Does the recitation of the first couple of words, is that considered a beginning? So now Abaye asks, Omar Le Abaye, my Malyusa, what's so wonderful about this teaching? The Ha Omar Rav Kan Omar Rav, Lo Yasil, that in the evening one is not to begin the third paragraph. As we said, it's not the time for the theme of the third paragraph, the tzitzis. The im hischil gomer, but if he does begin, then he has to say the whole thing. V'chitema, you might say, v'omarta aleihem, that by saying those couple of words, which we would say, v'yomar Hashem el Moshe lemar, daber el b'nei Yisrael, v'omarta aleihem. That is lo have haschol. It doesn't constitute a beginning. That's not true. Va'omarav Shmuel bar Yitzchok Omarav daber el bnei Yisrael lo have haschol. By saying those words, the first couple words of the second pasuk, that's not a beginning. However, if you go further and you say Omarto Alehem, you say those, you continue saying those words, have haschol. That's already a beginning. So once you, As you said before, that in Eretz Yisrael they would in fact say those words, so that's a beginning. Omar Rav Papa, Kosavri b'Marava. Rav Papa explains what the opinion in Marava was. Marava is the opinion of Eretz Yisrael was. V'yomarto aleihem nami loi have haschola. That those words as well do not constitute a beginning. The Omar v'osu lohem tzitzis, until he would continue reading the next three words. That, and only that, is a beginning. Omar Abaye, Hilkoch, therefore, as far as our practice is concerned, Anan, Aschuli Maschulinon, Deko Maschuli Bimarova, we begin, because in Eretz Israel they began, the Kevon Daschulinon, Migmar Nami Gamrinon. But once we begin, we also finish it off. De Omar Rav Kana Omar Rav, Lo Yaschil, Vim Hischil Gomer. As we saw before, that one doesn't have to begin, but if one does begin, so then one has to finish. Chio Barav Omar. Omar Ani Hashem Elokechem, if a person said that, and this is a reference to Parshas Tzitzis. If a person said Parshas Tzitzis, Tzorech Loimar Emes. So he has to say that, like we mentioned before, because it says in the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Vashem Elokim Emes. However, Lo Omar Ani Hashem Elokechem, if he didn't say Parshas Tzitzis, Eino Tzorech Lomar Emes. He doesn't have to say that word. It would appear then that he would start, he would have finished, let us say, the second paragraph of Kriya Shema, and then go on to say Ve'emuna Kol Zos. The Gemara asks, what about all of this idea of skipping the third paragraph of Kriya Shema? V'haboy lad kure yitzias Mitzrayim. Doesn't he have to make mention of the exodus of Mitzrayim? As we had learned on Daf Yud Beis, Mazkirin Yitzias Mitzrayim Balelos. And if he doesn't say he doesn't say Emes Ve'emuna, which we before said that it, we mentioned here that if he said the third paragraph, then he has to say Emes. Apparently from Rashi, it could be understood not only the word Emes, but possibly the contents of that paragraph as well. The question then is, if you're going to skip the third paragraph of Kriya Shema, and you're not going to say the contents of that paragraph, so are you not overlooking, or you're not skipping over the mention of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which one should do at night? So the Gemara answers, De Omar Hachi, he who does not say the third paragraph of Kriya Shema has a replacement text. He says as follows, Modim, in other words, after finishing the second paragraph of Kriya Shema at night, one would say, Modim anachnu lo Hashem Elokeinu, shosei sonu me'eretz Mitzrayim, uvdisonu mibeis avodim, we acknowledge and thank you for having taken us out of Mitzrayim and redeemed us from the house of slavery, v'yasisalonu nisim ugvuros al hayam, v'sharnu loch. And you also did miracles for us on the sea, and we sang to you. And what did we sing? And you would continue with Mi Chamoicha Boilim Hashem V'chulei, and Machuscha Ro Vonecha, until you get to the bracha of Goal Yisrael, and you continue with Hashkivenu. So to summarize what we have just learned, we saw different practices with regard to dealing with the that which follows the second paragraph of Kriya Shema. Yes, do you say the third paragraph or not? That we saw different minhagim of whether they would begin it, and upon beginning it, do you finish it? And if not, there is a replacement text. And that is for the purpose of mentioning Yetzias Mitzrayim at night. The Gemara continues, Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, Loma Kodmo Parshas Shema v'chulei. This section of Gemara will deal with the topic, and we have on the outside margin, Tam L'Seda HaParshas Shel Kriya Shema, the reason for the order of the different paragraphs of the Kriya Shema. In general, it may be noted that Parshas Shema, the first paragraph appears in Parshas Vo'eschanan, which is the second parsha of Sefer Dvarim. The second paragraph of Kriya Shema in the Torah is found in Parshas Ekev, which follows Vo'eschanan. And the third paragraph of Kriya Shema is found in Parshas Shlach, which is much earlier in the Torah. It's in Sefer Bamidbar. That's as far as their order in the Torah, but the order of our reading the Parshios is, of course, quite different. It's Shema, Vohoyim Shemo, and then Vayomer. So, our Gemara now continues with a Tanaic source, Tanya, Reb Shimchai Omer, Bedinhu, Shiaktim, Shema, Vohoyim Shemo. It means by, Bedin literally would mean by law, or by letter of the law. Or from by basic understanding, it makes sense that Shema should precede Vayom Shema. Shezeh Lumoid, the Parsha of Shema contains an instructions for someone to engage in his personal Torah study. Vezeh Lelameid, and Vayom Shema, in which it says Vilimadetem Oisom Es Benechem, deals with teaching others. And one cannot teach others unless he himself has learned. Therefore, learning, which is mentioned in one's personal learning, mentioned in the first paragraph, should come before teaching others, which is featured in the second paragraph. The second paragraph, as we have it, should come before the third paragraph. The second paragraph contains the idea of more, there's another girsa that reads Shezeh Lelameid. This has to do with teaching others. Vezeh La'asois. And the third paragraph deals with the carrying out, the performance of mitzvahs. The Gemara continues. Otu Shema Lilmoid Isbe Lilameid Velasois Lesbe. Is it accurate to say that Shema contains only an instruction of personal learning, but teaching others and performance of mitzvahs it doesn't have? V'hoksiv. We should note, by the way, that we're in the middle of a long question, and that's featured on the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, the encircled kuf in the descending vertical dashed line, indicating all of these lines form the question. So we're asking, the first paragraph is only about your own learning. Does it not deal with teaching others and performance of mitzvahs? V'hoksiv, but it says in the first paragraph, it says v'shinantam, and it says ukshartam, ukhsaftam. This has to do with the binding of the tefillin and the writing of mezuzahs. So those are mitzvah, action mitzvahs. So you see that the first paragraph has all of those other ideas as well. It's got Shinantam Levonecha has to do with teaching others and the performance of mitzvahs. So why does the Tanaic source categorize Shema as being only one's own learning? And only the second paragraph has in it teaching others, when the first paragraph has all of these. Vesu, and furthermore, Vohoyim Shema Lelameid Hu De'is Bei Velasus Les Bei. Does the second paragraph have a reference only to teaching others and not fulfillment of mitzvahs? Voksiv Ukshaltem Uchsavtom. It says in the second paragraph, Ukshaltem Oisom Li Oisal Yedchem, and it says Uchsavtom Al Mezuzos Beisecho Vishorecho. So you see the action mitzvahs there as well, the performance of mitzvahs referenced in the second paragraph. Elo hochi komar. Now we have to bear in mind that we just finished asking on the Tanaic source we had learned just a few lines up, so here the Gemara restates it. So it is to be understood as follows. Bedinhu shetikdam shma v'mishamua. The first paragraph should come before the second. Shezeh lilmoid ulelameid velasos. The Shema has in it, the first paragraph has in it, three elements. V'hoyim Shemua Levayomer. The second paragraph should come before the third paragraph. Shezeh Yesh Bo Lumoy V'lasos. The second paragraph has two aspects, namely teaching of others and the performance of mitzvahs. And Vayomer Ein Bo Elo Lasos. And Vayomer has only a reference to the carrying out of a mitzvah, in the case, as is the case of tzitzis. In the last number of lines of Gemara, we've been featuring the order of the parshas of Kriyas Shema based on the teaching of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, in which the ideas of learning, teaching, and performance were discussed. So the Gemara asks, V'tepuk lei midi Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. Why not learn out the reason for the order based on Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, who was featured in our Mishnah? The Mishnah, back on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, in which we saw Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha gave us a reason for the order. And he asked the question, why does Shema come before Voyim Shemoa? And he said, because one should first accept upon himself Olu Malchus Shemayim. First he accepts the Almighty as the King, and then you talk about accepting his instructions, his mitzvahs, which is featured in the second paragraph. And the third paragraph comes afterwards because it's applicable only by day, and as opposed to the other two paragraphs, which are applicable by day and night. Why then, if we have such a beautiful reason as Reb Shulman Korcha in the Mishnah presents it, what do I need any more reasons? Or what about that? So the Gemara says, Chado v'od komar. In fact, both are acknowledged. Chado, one reason of the order, is Kedei Shikavlo of Malchus Shemayim Tchilo, V'achakach Yikavlo Olov Olo Mitzvos. As Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha said, first one is to accept the yoke of heaven, meaning acknowledging the kingdom of Hashem, and then accept his commands. And furthermore, Mishum de'is bo hani mili achronaisa. The different paragraphs have the above mentioned factors as well. In other words, the first paragraph has all three aspects of learning, teaching, and performance, and then hence it should come before the second paragraph, which has only two elements. Rav, we're going to see now the practice of Rav in the morning, how he rose from bed, from sleeping, and what he did. And then we're going to compare that behavior in terms of order of performance of different activities with what we see in sources. So the Gemara says, Rav Moshi Yodei, he washed his hands, the Korah Kriyashma, recited the Kriyashma, Vonach Tfilin, and then put on Tfilin, Umatzli, and then he davened. So the Gemara says, Vehechi Ovid Hochi, how could Rav do things in that order? V'hotanya, we have a Tanaic source that says, Achoifer Kuch Lemeis, Bekever. One who is digging out a grave for a body. There's a corpse that needs burial, and we're talking about someone who is now in the early morning hours, and he's engaged in digging a grave for a corpse. Potter mikriyashmo minatfila uminatfilin. He is exempt from all of these mitzvahs. He doesn't have to do kriyash, doesn't say kriyashma, nor daven, nor wear tfilin. And from all other mitzvahs as well. V'chol mitzvahs amos b'torah. Higia zman kriyashma, oyle v'noitel yodav, v'miniach tfilin, v'kori kriyashma, v'mispalel. Notice the dashed underlining. When the zman kriyashma comes, he washes his hands, first puts on the tfilin, and then reads the kriyashma and davens. There's a bracketed section of Gemara. If we skip it momentarily, Mikomokam Kashi L'Rav. From this source, specifically that which we dashed underlined, we see a problem raised against Rav. Notice the Rav's order was Kriyashma and then Tfilin. The source says Tfilin and then Kriyashma. the Gemara will attempt to answer that, but before we get to that, let's go over the bracketed section. First, the Gemara asks, after reading the source itself, leaving the question on Rav aside for a moment, Hagufa Kashya, the source that we read is inherently contradictory. Reisha Omar Potter, the opening section of the source says that one who is engaged in preparing a grave for a corpse is entirely exempt. V'seifa Chayav, and the continuation, the latter part of the source says that, well, when the Zman of Kriyat Shema comes, he has to do all of these mitzvos. Is that not a contradiction? Ha lo kashya. No, this does not pose a contradiction. Seifa betray, v'resha b'chad. The Seifa is talking about where there are two people, and therefore the work on the grave won't come to a halt, so that that one will continue the digging while the other one says the Kriyat Shema and the Tefillin and the Shemone Esrei, and when he finishes, so he will then resume the digging, and the other one will take care of those mitzvahs. The ratio where there is no one else available to do the digging, so he is osek b'mitzvah poter min ha-mitzvah. He's involved with the digging of the grave and the preparation for the grave for the corpse, so he's exempt from the other mitzvahs. And as we said, there is no one else. Mikol mokom kashya l'Rav, but we do see a problem for Rav. The Gemara answers, Rav, k'Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho svirolei. Rav, who did the Kriyat Shema and then put on tefillin, was following the teaching of Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho that we saw in the Mishnah, the Omar. He said in the Mishnah on Daf Yud Gimel, Ol Malchus Shemayim Tchila, one does the first paragraph of Kriyat Shema because that represents acceptance of the yoke of heaven, the acceptance of Hashem's monarchy, the achakach ul mitzvahs, and then the mitzvahs, which is featured in the second paragraph of the Kriyat Shema. By the way, before we go any further in the Gemara, we should have noted the structure of this Gemara. We featured Rav's practice, and then you'll notice we have triangles appearing in alternating directions. So under our topic heading, we had written on the outside margin, Hanhogas Rav Baboker. We're dealing with Rav's practice in the morning, where we see an incident, Mikre Shekora Kriyat Shema Varaka Haka Hiniyach Tefillin. After first he read the Kriyat Shema, and only afterwards he put on the Tefillin. So as far as the triangles are concerned, under our Mivne heading, you see the triangle featured, and we call this a Ma'akav, an attempt to keep track. And with the point facing up, those are kushyos, they represent questions, and when the point faces downwards, responses. So after raising the question from the Tanaic source, we answer that Rav is based on the great authority, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. Thereby, we are able to justify Rav, who said the Kriyat Shema first and then engaged in the performance of mitzvahs. However, there is a question. Amar the Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha lakdim kriya l'kriya. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha was limited to the issue of ordering the reading of various paragraphs. Hence, read the first paragraph Shema before Voyim Shema, because the first paragraph has Kabbalas Oil Malchus Shemaim and the second has Kabbalas Oil Mitzvahs. However, kriya l'asiyo misham islei, does Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha say that you're supposed to do the reading before the performance, the actual performance? Not necessarily, as far as ordering of readings are concerned. So the order is as we said. But as far as reading versus performance, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha might very well hold you have to put on the tefillin first and have be wearing the tefillin when you come to recite the Kriyat Shema. So we can't find a basis for Rav. Rav he said Kriya Shema and then put on the tefillin. We have a Tanaic source that says first the tefillin and then the Kriya Shema, and to base Rav on Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, that we cannot do. Now, you'll notice we have a bracketed section. This bracketed section is for an initial skipping, which will make this Gemara much easier, because at this point we're left with a question. We don't have anyone on whom to base Rav's practice. So when we skip this bracketed section, we come immediately to the answer. Shlucha hu de'ovis. Rav's practice that was featured at the opening of this section was a contingency. It really wasn't the ultimate way of doing things. What happened? Shlucha is the messenger. He messed up. He encountered a problem and didn't bring the tefillin to Rav on time. So that Rav was confronted with the issue of, well, what am I going to do? I don't have my tefillin right now, and it is the zman of Kriya Shema, and I'm afraid that if I wait for the tefillin, I'm going to lose out on the Kriya Shema, which has to be said on time. So, because he didn't have his tefillin, so he read the Kriya Shema, and later, when the tefillin arrived, he put them on. That's the explanation for Rav's behavior. But optimally, one should first put on the tefillin and then say the Kriya Shema, as we saw in the Tanaic source above. Now that you know the superstructure of the Gemara, let's go over the bracketed section. So we raised the question on Rav from logic, namely, how can you say that? Who says that Rav is based on Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha when Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha only spoke about the ordering of readings, not performance versus reading? Vesu, we're starting with the bracketed section on the first of the widest lines toward the end. Vesu, mi sava leik Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. Does Rav even hold by Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha? V'ho ma Rav Chiya bar Ashi, zimnin sagiyin, many times, havekuimno kame de Rav, I was in the presence of Rav. Umaktim umoshi yode, he got up early, washed his hands, umavorech, and said Birkas HaTorah. Umasni lon pirkin, he taught a shiur, a Torah lecture. Now, the performance of a Torah lecture is considered asiya. It's an asiya of Torah study. It's an action of teaching Torah. Masi lon pirkin umonach tefillin, he put on the tefillin. The hodar kori Kriya Shema, and then said the Kriya Shema. So we see from Rav's behavior that there is actual performance before the Kriya Shema, v'hodar kori Kriya Shema. So that, in other words, even if you were to try to assign Rav to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha without the question we raised about lahakdim kriya siya, does he hold that? But rather try to ascribe Rav to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, who says first Ol Malchus Shemayim and then the performance of mitzvahs. Here we see Rav in practice doing the mitzvahs before the Ol Malchus Shemayim, so that you can't assign Rav to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha as you tried to do originally. You might want to say that this story was a case where it was very early, and therefore he took the liberties of teaching Torah before the Kriya Shema, because the Zman of Kriya Shema had not yet arrived. Well then, in Cain, if that was the case, Maya Seduce de Rabbi Chiya bar Ashi, of what value is there in hearing testimony of Rabbi Chiya bar Ashi concerning Rav's practice? It would be something that's very obvious. I wouldn't need Rabbi Chiya bar Ashi to tell us a special story about Rav's behavior when it would be so obvious. Well, to this last point, we can tell you, in fact, that really Rav does hold like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, but that the time hasn't come. And if you'll ask, then that would be so obvious. Well, no. Nafuke mimad amar lemishna ein tzorach levarach. I need the story that Rav Chiya taught us for a different reason, to exclude the opinion that says for Mishnah in the issue concerning Birkas HaTorah, which is a sukkah, which is something we learned a few dapim ago, for what does one have to say Birkas HaTorah? And there was an opinion that said only for Mikra, only for Psukim, one says Birkas HaTorah, but not for the learning of Mishnayis. So here we're coming to show that Rav did say Birkas HaTorah, as it said here, Umevorech Umasilon Pirkin. It said here that he said the Birkas HaTorah and then taught a shiur involving Mishnayis. Komash Malon, this story would inform us, the Afla Mishnah, Nami Tzorach Levorech, that for Mishnah, you do have to make a bracha. So that would be the value of this particular story. However, Mikol Mokoim Kashya L'Rav, but we still have a problem with regard to Rav, because in the original story we saw that Rav did the Kriyashma, he said the Kriyashma, and then put on the Tefillin. And in trying to set up Rav like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, you'll notice we had a question just before the bracketed section that said that is untenable, because it's not conclusive to say that Rav would hold like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, because Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha wouldn't say his point of being makdim ol malchus shemayim before mitzvahs when it comes to an issue of carrying out the mitzvahs, namely the putting on of the tefillin. So that Rav, who said Kriyat Shema before putting on the tefillin, wouldn't be based on Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. So how do we explain Rav's original behavior? The Gemara answers, Rav's original behavior, as was featured at the beginning of this section, was a contingency. Shlucha hu de'ovis. The shliach, the one who was a messenger to bring Rav his tefillin, was delayed. It was a mess up on the part of the shliach. And as we said before, Rav was in a bind, and he had to say the Kriyat Shema because of his fear that the time for Kriyat Shema would pass before his tefillin would ever arrive. Omar Ula, Kolakuri Kriyat Shema below tefillin kilu meid edus sheker ba'atzmo. Anyone who says the Kriyat Shema, in which you see the instructions of wearing tefillin, the command to wear tefillin, if one says the Kriyat Shema without the actual wearing of the tefillin, then it's ki'ilu meyud edus sheker, as if he's offering false testimony be'atzmo. Now, regarding this word be'atzmo, there are different approaches in the Meforshim. Rashi says lishna ma'alya, it's a euphemism. So it would be as if he's saying false testimony of the Almighty. Well, in what sense? Here, on the one hand, the Almighty commands that you shall wear tefillin, and here this person is countering that. I'm not wearing tefillin. The other approach in the Meforshim is Be'atzmo, literally, he's saying Eidus Sheker concerning himself. On the one hand, he's testifying by his reading of the Kriyat Shema that one should wear tefillin, and lo and behold, he is not wearing the tefillin. So he's contradicting himself. His practice contradicts his words. Omar Reb Chiya Bar Abba, Omar Reb Yochanan, Kiilu Hikriv Oyle Belo Mincha VeZavach Belo Nesachim. One who says the Kriyat Shema without wearing tefillin is as if he is offering a sacrifice, missing the additional elements. And the Gemara's example is one who offers an ola sacrifice without the accompanying meal offering, which is an essential part of an ola offering, and a zevach other korbanos without the nesachim, without the wine offering that accompanies them. Rashi points out that the Gemara's lashon here is not exclusive, namely an ola also has nesachim with it, and other zvachim, other korbanos have menachas. But what's happening here is that he's using the lashon of the pasuk, which in the pasuk you see it says oilo mincha zevachu nesachim, so that in the pasuk the mincha, the meal offering, is associated with an ola, and zevachim, other sacrifices, are associated with nesachim. But as we said before,
on a practical level, it's not limited to that. The Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Ha Roitze Sheyikabel Olav Oil Machus Shemayim Tchila. Here we have another statement of Rabbi Yochanan. That's why we have a little house marking around Rabbi Yochanan to indicate that this is just another member of his. He says here, one who wants to accept upon himself the kingdom of the Almighty in a complete fashion. We continue now at the top of the Tes Vav Omer Aleph. Yifaneh, he should relieve himself in the bathroom, V'itol Yodov, and we're talking about the proper practice in the morning and leading up to Kabbalah Solmachu Shemaim. So he relieves himself, he cleanses his body in that sense, and he washes his hands, V'yoniach Tfilin, puts on the Tfilin, V'yikru Kriyashma, V'yispalo, he recites the Kriyashma and then Davens, V'zuhi Machu Shemaim Tchila. This is the complete proper way of accepting upon oneself the reign of the Almighty. Amar Rav Chiya bar Abba, Rabbi Yochanan, kol anifne v'noyte yodav u'meyach tefillin v'korei kriyas shma espalel. Anyone who does this, ma'alav hakosuv ki'ilu bono mizbeach v'ikriv olav korban. It is considered as if he built a mizbeach and offered on it a sacrifice in a positive sense. Dichtiv erchatz b'nikoyen kapay v'sova es mizbechacho Hashem. So in this pasuk you see a reference to one cleansing himself, and then he's preoccupation with the mizbeach. The Rashi adds at the top line, Dichtiv erchatz b'nikoyen, mashma erchatz kol haguf. It's mashma a cleansing of the whole body. And actually this Rashi will hold off on. This is relevant to the next point in the Gemara. So let's go back to the Gemara. Amar le Rava. Rava says to respond to what Chiyo bar Abba said. Lo savar lamor kilu toval. Do you not consider it as if he actually immersed in a mikveh? Dichtiv erchatz b'nikoyen. The lashon of the pasuk is I will erchatz is wash b'nikoyen and cleanse. The lo ksiv architz kapi. It doesn't say in the pasuk washing my hands. And that, here Rashi is relevant at the top. Rashi says dichtiv erchatz b'nikoyen. Mashma erchatz kol aguf. It's mashma that it's talking about a cleansing of the entire body. The lo ksiv architz kapi. And it doesn't say washing of one's hands. Lidrosha also, it's coming for a drosha. It's coming for the purpose of expanding on the pasuk. Lomar shemalav schar gufitzus kapov kiilu toba kol gufo, to treat one who washes his hands in the morning as if he washed his entire body through immersion in the mikvah. Amalei ravina l'rava chozimar hai tzum rabbanan note. He says to Rava, note this Talmud Chochem that the Osa Mima Rava that came from Eretz Yisrael, the Omar, and says the following: Mi she'ein lo mayim lirchoitz yodav mekanech yodav ba'ofar ubitzor ubikismis. He who doesn't have water, he shall rub his hands on dirt, or a tzor is a stone, or kismis a piece of wood. Amalei Shapir Ko Omar. Rava says that this teaching is a good teaching. Miksiv Erchatz B'mayim. Does it say in the pasuk that one's expected to wash with water specifically? It doesn't say that. B'nikoyon Ksiv. It says to clean. Ko Midi Dimenaki. Anything that cleans. In other words, what we're interested is in removing of debris from one's hands, not necessary contact with water per se. Water is just one example of something that would remove debris, but rubbing one's hands on a stone or on a piece of wood would also
accomplish that ends. We know that Rav Chisda Layet is literally to curse or ridicule someone who sought after water specifically at the time that when the time for davening has arrived. Now we read here the word tslosa. One should just recognize that this is a flexible term, as the Gemara points out, Bahani Mimi v'Kriyashma. That is true with regard to Kriyashma. Rashi on the third line from the top says the Kriyashma v'Idnin the Kriyashma shizmana kavua penyavar zman. The Rav Chisda's ridicule was with regard to Kriyashma, whose time may pass. Avo litfila the chola yom zmanahu, but with regard to tfila, which one has, in theory, has all day available for that. Tzorach l'mahadar amaya. Now that's Rashi's pshat. We must point out that there will be a discussion in the Tosfos concerning this point, but for right now we're going to stick with the Rashi's pshat, who says that Rav Chisda's ridiculing of seeking out water is when you're dealing with washing with water for Kriyashma, and the problem being that if you're going to seek out water, the Zman of Kriyashma may pass, but Tefillah, you have more time for Tefillah, so you are expected to seek out water for that. That's what the Gemara says. Avol tefila mahader. One should seek out water. The ad kamo. How much should he go out of his way to seek out the water for washing? Ad parsa. To the distance of a parsa. Parsa is 4 mil, approximately 4 kilometers. Vahani mili lekamei. The requirement of seeking out the water up till a parsa is if you're dealing with someone on a journey, so and he's going from place A to place B, so as long as he's walking in the direction of place B, we expect him, don't daven right now, but continue on your journey toward place B for another, up till another parsa. Avol achore, but as far as backtracking in order to find water, afilu mil eino choser. Even one complete meal, you don't have to backtrack to get the water. Umina, and from this we can infer, meal hudeinu chozer, backtracking a complete meal, which is approximately a kilometer, that far you don't have to go. Hapochus mi meal chozer, but to backtrack less than a meal in order to find water, one would be expected to backtrack. And we have to emphasize that this issue concerning the water for tefillah, for the Shmona Esrei, is pshat based on Rashi's explanation of the Gemara. However, Tosfos, Amir Tzashem, we will learn later, has a totally different approach. This concludes today's Gemara section. For those who are interested, there follows a shiur on today's Tosfos. So let us now turn back to Daf Yud Dalid. There is a rather long Tosfos you can see starting at the top. The Gemara had mentioned interrupting the Hallel recitation, and a distinction was made between days that a person says the entire Hallel, it's called Yom Shah Yochid Gomer Blesa Hallel, versus days She'ein HaYochid Gomer Blesa Hallel. So now the Tosfos points out Yomim Shayochid Gomer Sahala Lav Davki Yochid. Even though the Lashon of the Gemara was Yochid, the word Yochid, which means an individual, it doesn't mean literally a private or individual, someone davening or saying something on his own by himself. Elo Afilu Tzibur Kore Yochid. The term Yochid can apply to a community. So you'll ask, if it applies to a community, why are you using this unusual word Yochid? Kevon She'ein Kol Yisrael Biyachad Kamoshe B'shitas Pesachim B'Yudah V'Nisan. Since you don't have all of Israel together as a one giant gathering, as was practiced on the 14th of Nisan, when everyone brought their Korban Pesach to the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, in our context, the term Yochid can apply to different communities as well. So that when the Gemara says Yomim Shai Yochid Yomim Basahala, means days that that it's practiced, whether you're dealing with a private person or a community, those are days that they say the entire Hallel. V'lav Dafka Gomer. The use of the term Gomer here, is which literally means to complete, is not to be understood once again, not to be understood literally. The Vadai Kaimalon, we certainly hold the Yomim She'ein Yochid Gomer Es Halel Ein Chove La'Oimro Klal Afilu B'Dilug. The Tosfos is addressing the following problem. When you say days that people complete the Hallel, as opposed to those days that he doesn't complete the Hallel, that in and of itself would imply that you're referring to days that he is obligated, though, to say part of the Hallel. So Tosfos says that if you're dealing with days that you are not going to complete the Hallel, the idea of a partial Hallel recitation doesn't exist on an obligatory level at all. And that's what he said just now, Devadai Kaimelon, just reading the last line, Devadai Kaimelon Diyomim She'ein Yochid Gomer Es Hallel, those days that one doesn't say the complete Hallel, Ein Chovelom Rokla, there is no obligation to say it at all, Afilu V'Dilug, even through the skipping of the two paragraphs that we are familiar with. The Hochi Masha Be'erichin, and thusly it appears in Maseches Erichin. The Choshev there is mentioned Chof Alef Yoim, 21 days. The Yochid Goimer Bohen Es HaHalel. There are 21 days that are listed in which a complete Hallel is recited. Uporach, we ask, Rosh Hashanah v'Yom Kippur Nami Lema, why do you say just 21 days, which doesn't include Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? Shouldn't Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur also be days on which you say the Hallel? Mashma, de b'shar yomim tovim. From the fact that we're suggesting Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur as adding to the 21, it would indicate that other days which are not included in the list, for example, Kamo Barashi Chadashim, like the Hallel of Rosh Chodesh, Pshita Lei, it's obvious, the Ein Loimar, that one isn't expected to say it. Midalo Choshev Yoser Mi Chof Aleph Yom, from the fact that the Mishnah in Erechin doesn't mention any more than 21. Vigam midelo ko'omar, and furthermore, it doesn't say ligmor b'Rosh Hashanah uv'Yom HaKippurim. It doesn't say in the suggestion regarding Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you see we have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Tosfos text, it doesn't say there finish the Hallel or complete Hallel on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. The suggestion was just lema. So Tosfos is pointing out from the fact that it doesn't say ligmor b'Rosh Hashanah v'Yom Kippurim, the oz have mashma de b'shar yomim tovim kamo b'Rosh Chodesh vaday ein goymim avol koren. Then there would be room to imply that on the other holidays, on the other occasions like Rosh Chodesh, so one wouldn't complete, but one would say it. Avol ata mashma, but now that the loshon in the Gemara there was on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, lema, say it, as opposed to finishing it, it's mashma afilu kurin loy, that regarding the other days, there isn't an expectation even to read whatsoever. The fact that we do read on Rosh Chodesh, so Tosfos pointed out before, that was a minig, a custom, and nothing more than that. Something that's not obligatory. V'chein mashma perek vasur de tainis. And likewise, it would appear from the last perek of tainis, Rav, and there's a story told there that Rav iklu lebovel, Rav went to Bovel, chazinu dahav koru b'rosh chodesh. He saw they were saying the hallel on Rosh Chodesh. Sovar laf sukinu, he had in mind to stop them. Pirushoy sovar shoy gomre moso. He thought they were saying a complete hallel on Rosh Chodesh, which is not one of the days that are mentioned in Erechin to say it whatsoever. V'keva dechoza dekol medalgi delugi, when he saw that they were saying it partial, literally they were skipping, in other words, he came and he saw that they were saying hallel, but noticed that they weren't saying a complete hallel. Omar shma mino, he then concluded, minag avoseim biyodehem. Rav concluded, it is their custom. Alma, we see from this, diyomim de'ein gomrim bohen hallel, that on the days that a complete hallel is not recited, ein chova liomro, there is no obligation to say it whatsoever. From a purely legal standpoint or technical standpoint, there's no obligation to say it. Umashanu omer moso hainu mishum minuk, and the fact that we do have this practice of saying Rosh Hallel on Rosh Chodesh, that's a function of a custom, but not a function of an obligation. Now, just to review the main point that Tosfos is making, he started off with a sort of question where the Gemara featured the days that a person says a complete Hallel, and that would have implied there are days that one is obligated to say Hallel, but not a complete Hallel. So to that, Tosfos is saying, no. When the Gemara says the days that a person says a complete Hallel, that's not implying that there are days that he's obligated to say a partial Hallel, but rather the days that he says a complete Hallel, those are dictated by letter of the law, as is mentioned in Maseches Erechin. Those days that one does not say a complete Hallel, that's a function of a custom alone, not something that one is obligated to do. To restate or to say this point over in a different angle, the two phrases in the Gemara are really not balanced. The phrases of Yomim Shayochid Gomer and Yomim She'ein Hayochid Gomer. What do we mean they're not balanced? Meaning they're not both examples of obligations, but rather they're completely different. Yomim Shayochid Gomer Ben Asahalo, those are days that one is obligated to say the Hallel. The Yomim She'ein Hayochid Gomer Asahalo, those are days that one is not obligated whatsoever. And the fact that it is practiced to say an incomplete Hallel, that's a function of a custom and not function of letter of law. Continuing in the Tosfos, the Kosov the Machzor Vitri, Kevon She'eino Elo Minig Be'almo, the Machzor Vitri was a very early work, relatively speaking, early meaning from the early Rishonim period, assumed to be a Talmud of Rashi. So in the Machzor Vitri, it is stated that since the recitation of the Hallel on those days that we say what's called the incomplete Hallel, for example, Rosh Chodesh, where it's only a minug, lo mevorchinon alei, we don't say a brocha over it. Kinomer perek lulav arova, ein mevorchin al davar shehu minug. The Gemara in Sukkah indicates that we don't say brochas for something that is a custom. Umiu omer Rabbeinu Tam, de'eino raya. Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with the Machzor Vitri's proof, because what the Gemara in Sukkah is talking about is the taking of the Arova on the Sukkis. We are familiar with this practice on the seventh day of Sukkis. We, after finishing the Hoshanas with the Lulav, then take an Arova branch, and eventually we beat it on the ground. That is a custom. And the Gemara in Sukkah says that the taking, the holding of the Arava is not something that warrants a bracha. And the Machzor Fitri said, well, from that, we see that things that are of a custom nature, one doesn't say a bracha. Rabbeinu Tam disagrees and says that that is no proof regarding our topic of the Hallel on Rosh Chodesh, because there it's a very minor action, we'll say. It's the atiltul vaday lo mevorchinon. On tiltul, on merely handling the arava, that's something that doesn't warrant a bracha. Aval al mitzvah, but on something that we would categorize as a mitzvah, and he's referring to the recitation of the Hallel. After all, you're saying almost a complete Hallel, you're leaving out only two paragraphs, but he calls this a mitzvah. Pshita de mevorchinon. It's certainly something that you would make a bracha on. Dochazinon kol Yom Tov Sheni, we have precedent for this, that every Yom Tov Sheni, which is a reference to the 2 days of Yom Tov that are observed outside of Eretz Yisrael. There's a first day and then the second day. Now that second day, eino ela minhoga. It's a function of a custom. The Gemara elsewhere calls it minig avosenu biodenu. In other words, even though we know the official calendar dates, and we know that the first day of the holiday that we celebrate, the first day of Pesach, the first day of Shavuos, first day of Sukkot, that's the official holiday. The fact that there's the second, we have the second Seder or the second night, that's a function of a minig. And umevorchin, and yet we say brachas over that. An entire kiddush is recited, and when it comes to the Seder, a second Seder is conducted. V'hochi nami mashma demevorchin, and it is likewise apparent that, and it is likewise obvious that we would say brachas on this, on something that is, though it's a minig, but it's a mitzvah. If let's just go over this last point. Specifically on the Hallel of Rosh Chodesh, it's obvious that we do make a bracha. Those are the days that we said she'ein hayochid gomer sahallel. Because if you're not making a bracha on it, my hafsoka shayach bo, why does the Gemara talk at all about a break or an interruption? It's only because it's a unit that starts off with a bracha, and as everyone knows, you're not allowed to interrupt in the middle of a bracha, and the Hallel is something that, in this case, Rabbeinu Tam is arguing would begin with a bracha, and it ends with a bracha, hence you can't interrupt in the middle, or the issue of interruption becomes something to consider. Because if there was no bracha, then the whole issue of interruption wouldn't arise. The oid raya de mevorchinun al minhaga, another proof that you make a bracha on a minig. Meha de Rav, from a story that Rav Ol Lebe Knishta, and this is a reference to the story we saw above in where Rav entered the shul, that was featured from Maseches Tainis, and he saw them reading the Hallel, and he thought to stop them. Ve'im lo borchu betchila, if they had not set a bracha at the beginning, then amai lo hirgish Rav dehavi minhoga ad shidolgu. Why was Rav unsure or wasn't aware that it was a minig until he saw them skipping the paragraph? Avol bevada elo bevadai borchu. So what do you have to say? Rav was in this shul and he heard them start the Hallel with a bracha, and he thought, well, what are they doing? It's Rosh Chodesh. It's not a day for Hallel recitation by letter of the law. And then they got to the point where they got to the Lo Ilonu and skipped it. They skipped that paragraph, and now he saw. I see that what they're doing is merely a minig, and they're not saying the Hallel as if it were letter of the law. They're following a custom, so he didn't bother stopping them. Ubishmil Kane, because of the fact that they had made a brocha at the beginning, lo hirgish an hadilug, that he didn't become aware of it being a minig until the skipping. In other words, it started off as if it were an official halal. The im toimar amai lo asik adaite. You might ask, well, if he heard the brocha, so couldn't he have determined from the text of the brocha what they were doing? Why did he have to wait for the skipping? Couldn't he have concluded im borchu likrois o ligmor? In other words, likros would represent partial halel, and ligmor represent a someone with, in other words, the lashon of the bracha would be Baruch Ato Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Ligmor Es Halel, instead of Likro Es Halel. So couldn't he have determined from the text of the bracha what they were doing? V'yesh lomar debekach ein lochush. This would not be conclusive. Shebetoiv yochol levorech ligmor afilikshu medaleg oy ibcha. The attaching the specific wording to the practice is not binding. In other words, you could switch it around too. In other words, if you're going to say a complete halel, you might use the term likros, and if you're going to do a skipping, you might use the term ligmor. Umashim evorchen kach al hadilug likros shein goymim ligmor. That which, generally speaking, this is what we in fact do, is we would say likros for a skipping and ligmor when saying the complete thing, complete halel. Kedei shelo yitu, that's only so that people shouldn't make a mistake. However, that's the original possibility, though, does exist. As Tosfos said, because you could switch the expressions around. Mishum hochi lo hoya yochol lahavin mitoch habrocha. Mishum hochi is going back to the point that you could switch them around. Let's read that again. Mishum hochi lo hoya yochol lahavin mitoch habrocha ad hadilug. And therefore, Rav couldn't determine that it was a minig on their part until the skipping of the paragraph of Loilonu and then of Ohavti Kishma. V'yesh shiroitzin loymar diyochid oymer halel biyomim she'ein goymim she'ein lo levorech. There are those that want to say that a yochid that says halel on the days that a complete halal is not said, that he shouldn't say a brocha. Umiyu hasar mikutzi hoya omer, the kevon shirotza lechayev atzmo mevorech, the ein ze brocha levatola. The sar mikutzi says that since a person does say it, he takes upon himself to say it, even though it's a minig, but he takes upon himself the recitation as an obligation, he can say the bracha. He does say the bracha, and it's not considered a bracha levatola. Midi dahavi alulav vatkiyos dahani noshi mevorchos afalgam shein on mechayvos. Similar to what we see with regard to women who are not obligated in the mitzvah of lulav nor the mitzvah of shofar, and yet they make a bracha. Ubelele psachim yesh shemivorchin pamayim. And Pesach night, when we have the halel as part of the Haggadah, Tosfos brings a practice that there were those that made two brachas, b'tchila likros, v'achar hasuda achar shvoich mivorchin ligmor. At the beginning, when the halel is going to eventually be interrupted, so he would begin with the bracha of likros, and after the meal, the Seder night meal, after Shvoich Chamoscha El Agoyim is recited, and then the rest of the halel is said, they would make a second bracha, ligmor. Umaisi, ligmor literally is to finish. Umaisi raya mirushalmi, and they bring a proof from Yerushalmi. He the maisi alo, the chol habrochos poischis, the choismois the boruch, from the teaching, from the rule that all brachos are expected to have an opening and a closing bracha. Chutzmi min habrachos asmuchos lechaverta, with the exception of those brachos that appear in a series, one following the other, where you'll have a closing bracha without an opening bracha. Ubirchas haperos v'mitzvos, and brachos that you make over food and like fruits and mitzvah performance, which have an opening bracha and don't have a closing bracha to them. We say for the eating of fruit, you'd say Baruch Ato Hashem Elokei Lechemom Borei Pri Ha'etz, and that's the opening. There's no closing bracha. But other than brachas Muchel Chaverta, those are brachas that appear in a series, like you find in the middle of the Shmona Esrei, where there's each bracha there, Atochoinin, doesn't begin with a bracha. It's coming on the heels of Hokel HaKadosh. And then Atochoinin closes with Baruch Ato Hashem Chonein HaDoas, and then you begin Hashiveinu Avinu L'Sarasecha without an opening bracha. It's coming on the heels of Chonein HaDoas, and it closes. Those are exceptions to the rule. But otherwise, all brachas shall begin and close with a bracha. So a list of exceptions are mentioned. V'ho'ika ge'ula, but isn't there ge'ula pirush asher go'alnu? This is in the Seder, in the Haggadah recitation. The smucha lechaverta. Now that is a bracha that one would it seems to be that it's smucha lechaverta v'amai posachas v'boruch. Now, if you, how would Asher Go'alnu be smucha lechaverta? Well, it would be because you had recited a bracha for the Hallel, and this is the proof that we're trying to bring for this practice of saying a bracha on the beginning section of the Hallel and later for the end section. The bracha of Asher Go'alnu in the Haggadah, if you have one available, you might want to open it up. It's coming after after you started the first section of the Hallel. You would eventually, and yet that bracha opens with a, that Asher Go'alnu opens with a bracha. And even though it's smucha lechaverta, then the question then would be, why amai posachas v'baruch? So the answer to that specific question of why Asher Go'alnu opens with a bracha, Shanya, the Yerushalmi answers, the Imshama Bebeis HaKnesses Yotza, that if he had heard it in the shul, then he already fulfilled his requirement. Very likely a reference to the Hallel recitation that takes place in shul, and there a bracha is recited, so he would have already fulfilled his requirements, so that the Asher Go'alnu would be a stand-alone bracha, and hence it has to open up with a bracha. Uporech, the Gemara there asks, Vare Soifa, Pirush Yehalalucha, the Eina Smucha, it's not Somuch Shasuda Mafsekes, because you have the entire meal that interrupts. Then the halucha is the closing bracha of the Hallel. And it's not somuch because it's coming after the opening bracha, which would have been recited for the beginning of the Hallel, but there's a major interruption. V'afilu hachi eino posachas b'baruch. And even so, why is it that it doesn't open with a bracha? That is that Yehalalucha is a closing bracha for the conclusion of the Hallel, but there's no opening bracha. Umishani, and Gemara in Yerushalmi answers, Shtayim Heino, Achas Lahabo, the Achas Lishaavar, Pirush. Well, that phrase is now explained. Achas Lahabo, Zuhi Oisa Brocha, Shemivorchen Achar Achila, Ligmor.
Lahaba is that which we recite after the meal. We say a bracha ligmor, ula ois a bracha hi smucha. So that Yahalalucha, it's true that it's not samuch, it doesn't have the standard opening bracha which would have been recited before the meal, but it has an opening bracha, namely this bracha of ligmor. And don't forget, we're trying to prove, we're trying to bring a basis for the Seder night Hallel recitation having a bracha at the beginning of the second half. And that's what you see over here. The reason that Yahalalucha is not a problem of something that closes with a bracha without an opening bracha, because it does have an opening bracha, namely Ligmor Esahalel. Achas l'sho'avar, hainu oisa shebirech kodem achila. That's a reference to the bracha of the Hallel that's recited before, the first section, before the meal. Alma de mevorchen shnei pa'amim. You see from this that there were two brachas recited on the Hallel read during the Haggadah. All of this is the point that we started with on the first wide line of the Tosis at the end. There was a comment made, Ubelele Psochem Yesh Mevorchem. So that long point began there. And now Tosfos addresses that point. Miu mashma bishalmi kasher pirashti tchila. Shoyu mevorchen shnei pomim tchila v'sof. You see from this, we should point out that this is summarizing over there. You see from here, from the Yerushalmi, like was explained, that they made a bracha at the beginning. And at the end. Aval Oimer Rabbi Yehuda Shezu Hi Tema Gedola. Rabbi Yehuda says that this is something that's very wondrous or questionable. Me'achar Shebirech Kodem Achila, if he in fact made a bracha on the Hallel before, on the first section before the meal, Amai Mafsik V'Oichel Beintayim, why does he interrupt with a meal in the middle between the two sections of Hallel? Shrei biyomim she'ein yochid goymer b'enas Hallel, on those days that you don't say a complete Hallel, kivan shebirech tchila kamo hacha, once you open up with a bracha like we're describing here, eino mutu lifsok elu b'nei akovet. Interruption is not allowed unless it's interruption for honor purposes. Not for eating a meal. D'i b'shelo birech, if you were talking about a case that there was no bracha, amai lo yafsik be'emza, if then why shouldn't you be able to interrupt even in the middle? Afilu shelo mitnei hakovod, even if it's for a non-honor purpose, holo hoya mafsik shum bracha, he wouldn't, if he didn't make a bracha, he's not interrupting any bracha then. Therefore, the fact that we have a meal between the two sections of the Hallel, this Rabbi Yehuda is claiming, is a sign that there was no bracha at all recited at the beginning of the first section of the Hallel that we say at the during the Haggadah. Just to repeat, because if there was a bracha at the beginning of the first section of Hallel that we recite as part of the Haggadah, there would be no allowance, to be no heter for having a meal between the two sections. And he said, because even on days that we don't say a complete Hallel and we make a bracha at the beginning, there's no heter for interruption other than for COVID purposes. With this in mind, then, we have to go over the Yerushalmi that seemed to indicate that there was a bracha recited at the Seder Hallel. Ela nireh ha deporech b'Yerushalmi. The question that the Yerushalmi had mentioned earlier when discussing the rules of brachas having to be open and closed with a bracha, and we ask, well, what about geula? So here, and from that we were the, from that discussion we said, well, geula began with a bracha because sometimes a person was yotze the halal already in shul, but otherwise there was an opening bracha for the halal. So what about, how are we to understand the Yerushalmi now? So Tosfos says, ha de parach Yerushalmi hare geula de mashma de mevorchen ole atchila. From that we thought that you do make an opening bracha. Ayri ba'odam sha'oise haseder bevas achas. That question deals with a person who is conducting an unusual seder. He's doing the seder in one shot. The sha'oz eino mafsik. One shot means without the meal in the middle. But he goes through the entire Haggadah text without the meal. And in, under those circumstances, he really is not being mafsik. She'eino tzorech. Then, in fact, there would be, the question would come up, there would be no need for an opening bracha for the geula. So it's under those circumstances that the question of what about Asher Gon, why does it begin with a why does it begin with a bracha? Eino tzorech, it doesn't need because of the bracha from the opening of the halal. And there you would have an opening bracha for the halal without any fear of interruption, because as it says here, he was doing a seder b'vas achas. Avolanu shemafsikin lechol, but we who do interrupt the Haggadah, or we mafsik the halal with a meal, ein lanu levorech klal, lo b'tchila v'lo b'sof. There is no basis for a bracha to be recited, not at the beginning of the first section of the Hallel, nor at the beginning of the second section of the Hallel. And that which it said in the Yerushalmi, v'harei sofa. Once again, we're going over the Yerushalmi that was brought in before as a proof to the brachas and re-understanding it. What about this question? Barei sofa, you know what? Zehu asher goalnu. That's not a reference to what we thought before the bracha of Yahalucha at the end of the Hallel, but rather it's a reference to the asher goalnu, the choisemes beboruch. Why does it end off? Because that bracha ends off bracha to Hashem goal Yisrael. Why do you need to have that closing bracha in the paragraph of asher goalnu? Why does it need a closing bracha? It is an expression of thanks to the Almighty for His redeeming us from Mitzrayim. Kibrikas peros, just like we make a bracha on fruit, which is a singular bracha. Why does the Goalnu paragraph end with a bracha of Baruch Hashem Goal Yisrael? So that you'll notice here that once again that this question, this is the second or the reinterpretation of the second point of the Yerushalmi of the Hare, the Sofa, is referring to a question focused on the Asher Goalnu paragraph in light of the rules of brachas that open and close, but except for Birchas HaPeros. So we see Birchas HaPeros doesn't open and close with us, it's a singular bracha. So too, the Asher Goalnu should be a singular bracha and not have to close with a bracha. Umeshani, Shtayim Heino. The Yerushalmi answers, Shtei Geulos. When it says Shtayim Heino, it means that in that paragraph of Asher Goalnu, there is a reference to two Geulos. Achas lahabo v'achas l'shaavar, one in the future and one in the past. Pirush la'osid kemo yagienu. What does it mean? The future. The text in that paragraph of Asher Goalnu says yagienu that our hope is that we will come to future times of joy and redemption. The Gamhi Aruko Ktsas. It also is a text that has a certain amount of length to it. It's and as a result of that, it's not like Birkas HaPeros, which is a very short text, and hence only one bracha is necessary. The Gam Yesh Bo Lishaovar. It has in it also past tense, past reference. Kamo Asher Goalnu Migos Mitzrayim. So, all in all, the paragraph of Asher Goalnu has in it several ideas. It's not a singular idea text. It has a reference to future geulas, future redemption. It has a reference to the past redemption from Mitzrayim. It has an elongated text. All of these factors, v'fikach choisemes v'baruch, therefore, it has a closing bracha as well. Uma shehiksha mi'alucha, and that which the Yerushalmi had asked from Yahalalucha, she'eno smucha, here you have a case of a closing bracha, and it's not, and it doesn't have an opening bracha. The Yahalucha is the final paragraph of the Hallel, where it ends off, Melech Mehulah Batish Bochois. It has a closing bracha, but it doesn't have an opening bracha. L'fi ma shepirashti ata, according to that which we have explained till now, v'afilu hachi eino posachas b'baruch, so that according to what we've explained now, that as far as the paragraph of Yalucha, where there is no opening bracha, and yet there is a closing bracha, yesh li tein tam, we have to explain that. L'fi shihi hoido be'alma, it's a paragraph of thanks, of mere thanks, of thanks alone. The afilu shihi aruka ksas, even though it has a slightly long text to it, tiknu bo chasima velo psicho, it is set up like that, with a closing and without an opening, kamo elokai neshama, like that paragraph, which many of you may be familiar with from the morning davening, where that paragraph, elokai neshama, ends off Hamachsir Nefoshes Lifkorim Mesim, and it doesn't have an opening bracha to it. That's because you have texts like this that are what Tosis calls Hoidah Ba'alma, and therefore it's something that doesn't warrant an opening bracha in addition to the closing bracha. Therefore, it opens up Elokai Neshama, and it closes Baruch Ato Hashem Hamachzir Neshamois Lifgorim Mesim. V'chein Mashma B'Yushalmi She'edarkin Loi Mahalu Beis HaKnesses, and likewise, it appears in Yerushalmi that their practice was to say Hallel in Shul, V'achach HaShoysin Koysus Shalem B'Veisom B'Loi Shum Seder, and then they would drink four cups of wine without an entire Haggadah recitation, along with those. The boy Yerushalmi, the Yerushalmi asks, Shoson Vivas Achas Mahu, you see from there, they ask, what is the din if one drinks the four cups? It says in one shot, Pirush Ze Achar Ze, below Halel, the Seder Bein Tayim, Mahu, what is the din? So Shamina Minhodo, we learn from the fact that question is being raised, the Omar just to go over this last point where Tosfos says that from the Yerushalmi it's mashma that their derech was to say Hallel in the shul, and then they came home and drank the four cups without any Seder. And how do we see that? Because in the Yerushalmi the question was asked concerning drinking the four cups one after the other, and it says there below Hallel v'Seder b'Tayim Mahu, what do they do? And it seems that the question is, what do they do now that they're at home with regard to the Hallel? So there it answers, Nishma'inin min Hoda. We can answer that question, min Hoda de Omer Rabbi Yochanan, that which Rabbi Yochanan said, Hallel im Shoma Beis HaKnesses Yotza, that if they heard the Hallel in the shul, then they don't have to recite it again. V'chein mashma b'tei sefta. And in the b'tei sefta also, it's mashma, the mishal ohoyo yodea v'nichnas Beis HaKnesses v'chulei, that someone who wasn't aware and he went into shul and he heard the he heard what they were doing there. V'hashtana mimushav the b'shvil kach poisachs boros poisachs brocha d'asher glanu b'boroch. We now can understand why asher glanu opens up with a brocha. Our question originally was, why should it open with a brocha? Isn't it smucha l'chaverta? The taimo she'eno smucha. It's really not smucha l'chaverta ki ha. Like under these circumstances, the imkora hal beis haknesses yotze, because if they had said the halal in the shul, they were yotze. Therefore, at home, even in the event that they will be saying the halal in the seder, nevertheless, they won't be saying it with a bracha. Hence, when you get to asher go'anu, you have to open up with a bracha as per the rules of bracha text, that they must open and close with a bracha. So, from all of this, we have seen this last section of Tosfos. What have we seen? We saw a reference to a practice of saying two brachas in the Seder night Hallel that one says at home, and that practice was brought was an attempt to prove that such a practice took place from the Yerushalmi, but Tosfos took issue with that and said that you can understand that Yerushalmi in a different way, and being that that's the case, so there isn't a proof from there that the Hallel that one says in the Haggadah should be one with brachas as well. The next Tosfos, Oy Dilma Hano Kabel Ole, when raising the question of tasting food on a tainus that one had accepted on upon himself, what restriction did he accept? Was it eating and drinking? And tasting is not eating nor drinking. Or hana, pleasure, and this would fall under the category of pleasure. The taster says, O Dilma hana kabul olay, hai lishna mashma, the language of the Gemara of kabul olay, he accepted upon himself. It sounds the Mairi B'tainis Yochid Shekibel Olov. We're talking about a private person accepting on himself a vow to fast. Avol B'tainis HaKosuv Lo. But we're not talking about a tainis that is legislated by the verses, by Psukim. That's what we see from the language of Kobil Olay. Toem ve'en bekach klum, Tosfos says, Pirush Rach, and this Tosfos we learned earlier when we were doing the Gemara itself. The ruling of the Gemara was that he can taste and there's no problem. Pirush Rach, shechozer upolate, that this is assuming that he will then spit out that which he put into his mouth without actually swallowing it. The lo choshiv hano minatimo, that type of hana that he gets from the tasting is not considered a significant of any significance. Avol bolea loi, but to swallow, that certainly no. Afilu bishar tanios, even other tanios means other than those that we saw in the previous Tosfos, even those that are written in the psukim. Umishim hachi, and because of this, namely that it's not considered a hano, hapolein sorch brocha, sheino nena, one who tastes in that fashion then spits out, he does not have any need to make a brocha either. The Gemara discussed greeting a person in the morning before davening, and we had raised the question, how can you say that it's forbidden when we know that when saying Kriyat Shema you're allowed to interrupt for greeting someone, even though Kriyat Shema is before the Shmona Esrei? So the Gemara answered that the prohibition of greeting someone before Shmoneh Esrei, that's if you're going out of your way to his house, as opposed to someone who's already in shul sitting and going about his regular davening and someone comes by. B'mashkim lepischo, we said that is the problem. V'chein halacha, avol pogo ibakroi, but a chance meeting with someone without your going out of his way to meet him, mutter. It's mutter to greet him even though you haven't davened yet. We continue now on Omid Beis at the top. Loma kodma parshas shma levohoya im shamoya. The question had been raised, why does Parsha Shema come before Vehoya Im Shamoa? The Im Tomar, you might want to ask, Tepukle de Kodma Batura. Very simply, you want to know why Shema comes before Vehoya Im Shamoa? Because it comes before it in the Torah. So that, why are you even asking the question of Loma Kodma Parsha Shema? It would seem to be obvious. It comes, Shema comes before Vehoya Im Shamoa, because in the Torah Shema comes before Vehoya Im Shamoa. So the question that Tosfos is alluding to is then, why even ask the question? The Yesh Lomar, the Hochi Ka'omar. The real question is, the underlying question is, Loma Kodma Af Leparsha Sitzis. When the Gemara asks, or when the Mishnah asks, why does Shema come before Vayom Shema? The question really is, why does Shema come as the first Parsha? Namely, even before Parsha Tzitzis, the Kodma Lekulan. Parsha Tzitzis is in Shlach and Sefer Bamidbar. Technically speaking, it's the earliest of the paragraphs. So the question is, why does Shema, which is found later in the Torah, come in the number one position, even before Parsha Tzitzis, which in the Torah is found earlier? Ela vaday ein onu choshishim lozeh she kodemes batorah. The fact that something is earlier in the Torah is of no concern to us. We don't take that into consideration. Mishum damrinon ein muktam umeuchar, because our approach to the Torah, as far as order is concerned, is that there is no order in the Torah indicating something before and something later. V'im kein hoya lanu lahakdim v'hoya shehi medaberes b'loshon rabim. And since we don't take into consideration muktam mu'uchar, and as a result of that, we are not concerned whatsoever as to positioning of parshios in the Torah, therefore, the question of Loma Kodma Parsha Shema, the Vehoya Im Shamoa, really is, why should Shema come before Vehoya Im Shamoa when Vehoya Im Shamoa is in a plural Loshon? And being that it's in a plural Loshon, it's a plural language, it should be given precedence. So therefore, this is a, we'll call it a serious question of Loma Kodma Parsha Shema V'Hoyim Shamoa, when V'Hoyim Shamoa is written B'Loshon Rabim. Now to that we give the answer that we gave. You have in the Mishnah, because the logic of being Kabbal Olmach Shemayim before Ol Mitzvahs is an overriding point, or we saw also because the Shema has in it three characteristics, opposed to V'Hoyim Shamoa has only two characteristics, as we saw in the Gemara. The Tosfos Dibra Maschil Vayomer Eino Noheges Ela Vayom. This was the reason for the third paragraph of Kriya Shema being after Vehoyim Shamoa, because Vehoyim Shamoa has the topic of mitzvahs which include day and night, where Parsha Tzitzis features the Tzitzis, which is something that is binding only by day, and hence it should be in the third position. Mikan mashma kurbi shimin diomer perakatcheles the tzitzis mitzvah se shazman groma. From the fact that our Gemara describes Parsha Tzitzis as being binding only by day, so it's something that's time bound, and as such, tzitzis would be categorized as a mitzvah se, a positive command, shazman groma, that's time caused or time bound, and
as a result of that, women would be exempt from the mitzvah. As we learn in Maseches Kedushin, that mitzvah asei shehazman groma, are women are exempt from them. V'chein isa b'kidushin, and likewise you find in Maseches Kedushin, gomar tzitzis mitzvah asei shehazman groma, where the Gemara says that straight out. V'im tomar im kein, l'man d'omar tzitzis choivas talis hu. There is an opinion in Maseches Menachos that says that the tzitzis are something that is garment bound. In other words, the focus is not the human being, the person, but rather a four-cornered garment must have tzitzis on it. Vafilu munachas bekufsa, even if the garment is in a box, is in storage. Afilu hachi chayevis betzitzis. Nevertheless, it is obligated to have tzitzis on it. Well, if that's the case, you're dealing with a mitzvah according to the daya that it's chovas talis. It's a mitzvah that would apply around the clock. We're saying if it's a four-cornered garment and it's lying in a box, it's got to have tzitzis on it. So hechi ashkan she'azman groma. How, according to this opinion, would mitzvah tzitzis be considered a mitzvah say she'azman groma? Where do we see a manifestation of it being time bound or time limited? Where's the limitation? V'yesh loymar. There's an answer. The im hoya ksus amyuchad l'layla. If you have a four-cornered garment that is, we'll call it a pajama. In other words, something that's reserved for night wearing alone, then potter, it would be exempt. So that even though we're classifying mitzvahs as a chovas talis, as a chova, an obligation that's on the garment, nevertheless, there are garments that because their time is only at night, they would be exempt. So there you have mitzvah say shazman groma, even though you're dealing with chovas talis. V'hachi isa b'yushalmi dekedushin, Amar lehem Reb Shimon, I atem moidin li, the tzitzis mitzvah say shazman groma. Rabbi, from the Yushalmi, you see that from Reb Shimon's comment that even according to the Man d'Omar, that tzitzis are chovas talis, it still is categorized as mitzvah say shazman groma shrei ksus laila potim minat tzitzis. Reb Shimon shows you from the fact that it's a pajama or a nighttime garment that it is exempt from tzitzis, that tzitzis is mitzvah say shazman groma. Amar Rabbi Ila, Taima Durabonon, Shimhoya Miuchad Liyom Vilayla, Shechayav Betzitzis. If you're dealing with a garment that one wears by day and by night, so then it's Chayav in Tzitzis. Umonach Tfilin Umatzli. This Tosfos is coming from the Gemara where we saw Rav's practice toward the end of the narrow lines of Gemara. Rav woke up in the morning, washed his hands, said Kriya Shema, put on the tefillin, and then davened. So we see him putting on the tefillin between Kriya Shema and the Shmona Esrei. So Tosfos says, Umei hosa mashma shemutur lehoniach tefillin bein geula l'tfila. That it's one is allowed to put on the tefillin, and we're going to add here, put on the tefillin with a bracha, making a bracha on the tefillin, even though you're in this, we'll call crucial timing or position between Geula, between the end of Kriya Shema and the bracha of Goal Yisrael, and Shmoyne Esrei. V'chein betalis, miniach adam taliso, bein Geula l'tfila. Later in the Tosfos, we have a little arrow here, which will correspond to an arrow found quite a bit later in this Tosfos, where Tosfos will try to reject this and says there ain raya, because the motzi lemeimar hiniach tefillin below bracha. There, you could say that he put on the tefillin without making a bracha. So from here at this point in the Tosfos, he wants to bring evidence or proof that you could put on the tefillin with a bracha between Geula and Tfila, even though you're dealing with what we would call Smichas Geula Tfilas, we've learned in previous sugyas, where we want to have the two right next to each other, ostensibly without any interruption. And here, from this Gemara. Tosfos, the opening of Tosfos, feels that you see from here that the fact that he put the tefillin on between the Kriyat Shema and the Shemoneh Esrei, that can be done. V'chein motzinu sheRabbi Yitzchok Rabbi Yehuda shalach achar taliso. We find an incident where Rabbi Yitzchok sought his talis v'shah shliach, and the shliach tarried ukvar kora Kriyat Shema v'Hosea. And he had already, Rabbi Yitzchok in the meantime, had already said the Kriyat Shema with the brochas. V'nis'atik b'taliso v'gomar Shemoneh Esrei. He then put on his talis and then finished the Shemoneh Esrei. V'hevi raya mehacha mehahi derav. And his behavior for putting on the talis between the Kriyat Shema and the Shemoneh Esrei was based on Rav's putting on the tefillin between Kriyat Shema and the Shemoneh Esrei. Mikol mokom yesh lechalek bein tefillin letalis. Nevertheless, there is room for making a distinction between the case of Rav Yitzchok Rav Yehuda and his talis and Rav's din of the and Rav's practice with the tefillin. And what's the point of difference? In other words, the fact that Rav put on the tefillin, I can't conclude that you can put on a talis with a brocha between Shema and Shemoneh Esrei. The Iker Kriyat Shema utfila shaychi betfilin. Tefillin is much more related to the basic Kriyat Shema and Shemoneh Esrei. Kedamar b'somoch, as the Gemara says later on this Amid, kilu meyid edu sheker be'atzmo, one who would say the Kriyat Shema without tefillin on is as if he is saying false testimony, pirush ba'adon, and here, like we saw in Rashi, the made edus sheker ba'atzmo, that word ba'atzmo is a euphemism, and hence it's really a reference to the Almighty. So he's saying false testimony concerning the Almighty, shetziva shu kore, v'hoyu l'toytofois ula'ois al yodecha v'yein. The Almighty commanded, have tefillin on your arm and on your head, and lo and behold, you're doing the Kriyat Shema without it. Utfilo nami, tefillo also, we're saying, is associated, integrally associated with wearing of the tefillin. Kedo amoron, as we say, kori Kriyat Shema spalel, that's kori Kriyat Shema mispalel with the tefillin. Zuhi Malchus Shamayim. The Gemara points, this quote is from the bottom line of our Gemara, where Rabbi Yochanan says, one who wants the Mekabel of Malchus Shamayim Shlema, and at the top of Tesvav it says, Yifaneh, V'yitol Yodav V'niach Tefillin, V'yikur Kriyat Shema V'yispalel. So you see the Tefillin is part of the Kriyat Shema and the Tefillin in order to fulfill a true acceptance of Oil Malchus Shamayim. Avot tzitzis she'eno lechoyvas talis, but the issue of tzitzis, which is according to certainly one approach in Menachos, which is a chova, an obligation on the garment, shim yeshlo talis chayav v'im ein lo poter. We actually don't have to restrict this to the deos in Maseches Menachos, but tzitzis is a garment-related mitzvah. Even if you say it's a mitzvah on the person while he's wearing it, but nevertheless, it focuses on the garment that he's wearing, and if he doesn't have a four-cornered garment, he's not obligated in tzitzis whatsoever by letter of the law. There would be no problem with the recitation of Kriyat Shema without tzitzis. If he's not wearing a four-cornered garment, so there's no problem with saying Kriyat Shema without tzitzis. Vadai havi hafsoka, the havi hafsoka, the practice that Rabbi Yitzchok Rabbi Yehuda did, according to this point in Tosfos, would have been a break or an interruption, because it's not an integral part of the Kriyat Shema and the Tefillah, as opposed to Tefillin, which is an integral part of Kriyat Shema and Tefillah, it would not be considered an interruption. The Harav Rav Moshe Mikutzi Hoya Oimer Da'afilu Mikan Ein Raya, that even from this there is no proof. In other words, we tried to bring a proof from Rav, who put on tefillin between Kriyat Shema and Shemoneh Esrei, that you could put them on with a bracha. So the Rav Moshe Mikutzi says there is no proof to that. The Motzi Lemeimar Hiniach Tefillin Beloi Bracha. he put on the tefillin between the Shemoneh Esrei, between the Kriya Shema and the Shemoneh Esrei, without a bracha, lachar Shemoneh Esrei mashmish behem, after he finished the Shemoneh Esrei, when there's no longer any concern about interruptions, he then manipulated memashish, he felt or moved around the repositioned the tefillin, and through that umevorech alehem, and at that also is a, as a, we'll call it as a means of a symbolic putting on of the tefillin, and hence you could make a bracha at that point. Ubahachi sagi, and that would be enough. In other words, putting on the tefillin without a bracha between Kriya Shema and Shemoneh Esrei, so as to avoid any issue of hefsik. And as far as what about making the bracha on it, so make a bracha and then maneuver memashmesh b'hem, and that's enough. Shigam mutter l'sati b'talis b'eis shiod of mitunafos. We know that a person can put on a talis while he has filthy hands. V'achar shiito yodav, after he washes his hands, yamashmesh b'taliso, then he maneuvers the talis umavorech and says a brocha at that point. So what have we seen here? On the one hand, the beginning of Tosis try to bring proof from Rav that you can make a brocha on tefillin between Kriya Shema Shemoneh Esrei. Then Tosis went on to bring, he brought Rabbi Yitzchak Rabbi Yehuda, said we can extend this even to the putting on of a talis between Shemoneh Esrei and the Shema. Tosis then said, look, you can't compare tefillin to, or talis to tefillin. And then at the end of Tosis, the whole issue of putting on tefillin with a bracha at that crucial point is also rejected, because you could explain that one should put on the tefillin and a talis as well between the Shema and the Shemoneh Esrei without a bracha. Then after he finished Shemoneh Esrei, manipulate them, maneuver them, and at that point say a bracha on the tefillin, and if you're dealing with a talis, say it on the talis. We saw in a Tanaic source brought in the Gemara that a person who's involved with the digging of a grave is exempt from all mitzvahs and exempt from Kriya Shema. Interesting to note is that Kriya Shema is treated separately from the rest of the mitzvahs, but is it not so that Kriya Shema is an example of one of the mitzvahs? So why was it highlighted as a separate point in this source? That's what Tosfos asks. So the Tosfos says, "When we call mitzvahs amrus b'Torah, in addition to Kriya Shema, b'im tomar, v'chi Kriya Shema lo havei b'chal mitzvahs amrus b'Torah, is Kriya Shema not included in the mitzvahs that the Torah says?" So why, in the source, were we describing the person who is digging the grave is exempt from Kriya Shema, and in addition to that, he's exempt from all other mitzvahs? Just say he's exempt from mitzvahs, and that will include Kriya Shema. The Yesh Lomar, we can answer the E Lo Toni Be'edya Kriya Shema, if the source hadn't specified Kriya Shema and his exemption from it. Havi Amino, I would have thought the Dafka Hani the Lesbu Kviyuzman, other mitzvahs that aren't time related, time fixed, that those are the things he's exempt from. Avo Kriya Shema the Kviyuzman, but Kriya Shema that if you don't do it now, you're going to lose out because it has a fixed time. Hoyuzman Over. Since the time is passing, I would have thought that even though he's involved with digging the grave, he should break for the Kriya Shema and go back to digging the grave afterwards. Komash Malon, the source tells us, even for something like that, like Kriya Shema, that has a fixed time and the time will pass, he nevertheless is exempt because he's involved with digging the grave. And as we said in our Gemara, Shiur, one who's involved with a mitzvah, and that's a point, of course, we should give credit to Rashi. Rashi explained that on the in the middle of the Omer Dibur Masel Potter Mi Kriya Shema. One who's involved with a mitzvah is exempt from other mitzvahs. In fact, something we've learned earlier in this Masechta. The next Tosfos, Oila Belo Mincha, one who, in our Gemara, we described one who says Kriya Shema without tefillin, it's as if he is offering a sacrifice with lacking its additional parts, the mincha and the nesachim. So the Tosfos oila below mincha huadin the motzi lemeimar, the Gemara could have said an oila below nesachim, that with saying Kriya Shema without tefillin is like offering an oila without nesachim, which is the wine offering that accompanies a sacrifice. The Gemara said
it's like offering an ola without the meal offering that accompanies an ola, but it could have said like offering an ola without the wine that accompanies the ola. Shrei oila nami tuna nesachim. We know that a korban ola has a wine requirement as well. So then why does the Gemara say oila velo mincha? Elolishna de kronokat. The Gemara was using using biblical license, where the Torah says oila umincha zevach unesachim. So that in the Torah treatment of this matter, the ola is linked with the mincha. But we're emphasizing, Tosis is emphasizing, that is not exclusive, but rather an ola has, in addition to a mincha, a nesachim, a wine offering, is brought with it. We continue to the top of Tes Vav Omer Aleph, because Tosfos there deals with a point of Gemara that we learned as part of our Shiur today. This was with reference to Rav Chisda's ridicule of someone who sought out who was Mahader Amaya Bidin Sloisa. So we saw that Rashi's treatment of the Gemara dealt with someone who sought out water for the recitation of Kriyat Shema, and Rav Chisda ridiculed that. But for Tefillah, one was expected to seek out water. Now, as we said, that's Rashi's approach. We now look at Tosfos, Aman Demahader Amaya Bidon Kriyat Shema. The Yesh Svarim de Garsi, there are texts that have Hani Mili de Kriyat Shema, Avo Litfila Loi. Now, in our Gemara, we have a qualification that is just like that, where it says, Hani Mili de Kriyat Shema, Avo Litfila. A slight correction here. Our text in the Gemara is Avol Litfila Mahader, but there are Sforim that say that Hani Mili Krishma Avol Litfila Loi, but not for Tfila, not for Shmon Esrei. The Gemara of Shimon Ben Lakish, the Gabel Litfila Dalid Milin. Oh, let us say once again that when we spoke about Rav Chisda being ridiculing, he was ridiculing when one would seek out for Kriyat Shema, but for Tefillah, he wouldn't ridicule. And why not? Because Reb Shimon Lakish says, Legabel Tefillah, Dalid Milin. Without getting into details, Legabel has to do with the kneading of dough in a state of Tara, and Tefillah is Shemon Esrei, for meal, one is required to seek out. Venira de lo garcinon lay. But, Tosfos says, I don't like that girsa, which made a distinction between Kriyat Shema and Tefillah. De wadin le'inyan slo sonami. The same thing should apply to Shmon Esrei as well. In other words, Rav Chisda ridiculed one who sought out water for Kriyat Shema. He would likewise ridicule one who sought out water for Shmon Esrei. Why? Because of the same logic. Mitam shelo yavor zman tefila. Because of our concern that the time set aside for Shmon Esrei will pass. Shmon Esrei is something that is also time bound. The maishno kriyat shema mitfila. What's the difference? Just like kriyat shema has hours that are assigned for it, so too tefila has assigned hours beyond which you cannot say the Shmon Esrei. Vegam yesh lekamon perik misha meso, and also later in the Masichta, in the third perik, it says, but lua lenetilusa, they canceled the washing of hands, ke de Rav Chisda, based on Rav Chisda's teaching, delayat amad madar amaya bidon slosa. Rav Chisda's ridiculing or cursing of he who seeks out water during the time that one could daven. Umidalo hiskisham kriyashma. There, in the third parak, there's no reference to Kriyat Shema specifically. Mashma de b'chol inyan mutar. It would imply that under all circumstances, not only Kriyat Shema, but for tefillah as well, one can daven without the washing of the hands. Vahi de Reb Shimon ben Lakish, domer le tefillah dalet milin. What about Reb Shimon ben Lakish's teaching that says that for for tefillah for meal. What are you traveling for meal? The distance of for meal with regard to tefillah. Pirush Rashi lehispalel sham b'minyan. Rashi explains that comment of Reb Shimon ben Lakish in Psachim as seeking out a minyan of 10 people for Shmon Esrei, but not for seeking out water. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.